Welcome to On the Brink, a fresh lens to take you and your business to new heights. Hi, I'm Andy Simon, your host, and it's always such a pleasure and a privilege to have you join us for our podcast. Remember, my job is to help you get off the brink. I don't want you sitting there. It's either time to soar or to change your course. And today, it's a very important time for us to step back and rethink who we are, where we're going, and really to begin to plan the next phase in our own lives, our careers. It's a time of change. And so I have with us today a wonderful woman that I want to share with you. Shelley Archambault is a marvelous woman. I'll tell you about her in a moment. But she's got a message that I think is important for us to understand and begin to figure out how to apply to our own careers and our own lives. It's a time to rethink what matters, and it's a good time to hear from Shelley. So a little bit about Shelley and why I have her here. She's an American businesswoman and former CEO of Metric Stream. She was an executive at IBM, and she had a 15-year career there. She was the first African-American woman at the company to be sent on assignment internationally, and I thought that was an interesting note. She's a guest lecturer for Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, her alma mater. She's a writer, a co-author of the book Marketing That Works, and she is one of the top 25 click-and-mortar executives by Internet World. She has received numerous awards throughout her career. 2014, she was named one of the 46 most important African Americans in technology. The year before, she was number two on the list of the 25 most influential African Americans in technology. This is just a long list of accolades and accomplishments. And that's why it's so exciting to have Shelley with us today. Shelley has a new book that's just coming out in October. It's called Unapologetically Ambitious. And she's going to tell you more about its title, but also about what she hopes for you to learn from her own journey. Shelley, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Andy. I've been so excited and looking forward to this.
Can I share with everybody it's your birthday?
Sure. I'm spending it with all of you.
All your best friends. You didn't know you had so many new best friends.
That's right.
But it is a special day for me because I was honored to meet you and I'm so excited to share with you. Please tell the audience about your own journey because I think it's an important one for them to understand how we get to unapologetically ambitious. Please.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. So my journey, I actually have to start pretty young to really share the foundation that represents who I ultimately became. So I grew up oldest in the family of four. My father moved around a lot as he built his own career and job. And we found ourselves moving from Philadelphia, which was an extremely diverse place, to California, a suburb way outside of LA, where I was the only Black girl in my, heck, I think it was for sure my class, but I think it was actually for the school. And given
I'm
that it was...
I'm laughing, but it's not funny.
I know. But given that it was the 60s, you know, everything was just charged. You had the civil rights movement. You had everything was going on, Vietnam War. You had feminism was rising. I mean, it was just a very charged up environment. And here I am, a little girl going into first grade. We actually moved over Christmas. So here I am going into first grade. I had to walk to school every day. And people treated me terribly. I don't know any other way to describe it. I walked along a busy thoroughfare every day and people would yell awful things at me out their windows. You know, kids would physically bully me. I got beat up by classmates. I mean, it was not a good situation. So it taught me very early in my life that the odds were just not in my favor. So it caused me, you know, first to actually really close in as a kid. Fortunately, I had good parents, and I had a couple of teachers that really made a difference. And it became incumbent for me to really become intentional about what I did, really as protecting myself. So I learned early that if I wanted to do something, I needed to actually figure out how I could make it happen, because it wasn't just going to happen for me. And that same approach I actually have taken all through my career. So I started early, you know, I said, all right, what do I want, what do I need to do? And I was fortunate in high school, I had a guidance counselor who asked me, all right, Shelley, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go to college so I can get a good job. And she said, okay, well, what do you want to do in your job? And I said, I'm not sure. And she said, what do you like to do? And I loved running clubs. I was president of the American Field Service and National Honor Society, and I ran the French Club and right, all these things. I love running clubs. And she said, well, you know, running a business is just like running a club. You get people together, right? You line up, you do. What did I know? I said, okay, great. That's what I'm going to go do.
So it sounds so easy. No problem, right?
So literally, I decided, I think a junior in high school. I decided that I'm going to go run a business.
I love your story. Keep telling.
It's great. So anyway, back to, I know the odds aren't in my favor. And so when I did the research, and back then it wasn't easy. Right? Research now, you just click a few keys. Back then it was going to the library, looking at magazines. Well, I didn't see anybody who looked like me running a business anywhere. So I said, all right, fine. How do I improve my odds to get this? How do I make this happen? So I said, all right, I need to go to the top business school. And so I picked Wharton because Wharton had an undergraduate program. And I figured if I do Wharton undergrad, then I won't have to go to grad school. So I can save a couple of years, a couple hundred thousand dollars, right? This is great. So it's the only school I applied to. I said, please, literally at the bottom of my application and stuff, I said, please take me. I don't want to go anywhere else. I'm not applying anywhere else.
Wow.
Now, I'm not completely stupid. I applied early so that if they said no, I could do a backup, but I literally didn't apply anywhere else. That's the only place I wanted to go. And I had good grades. But anyway, so went to Wharton and then, you know, I pay attention. I listen. I do homework. And I was told if you join industries that are growing and companies that are growing, there are more opportunities for personal growth. Great. Looked around. Technology was the growing industry. Good news. Still is.
Yes.
And I picked IBM. So I said, I'm going to go off and be CEO of IBM. That was it. So I did.
I love your humility and kindness. Your aspirations were fabulous.
Exactly. It was just too funny. So anyway, so I did. And I'll be candid. I actually spent 14 years at IBM. I got to the point where there wasn't anyone who looked like me hiring me in the company. My boss, John Joyce, reported to Lou Gerstner, the CEO. I was running multi-billion dollar divisions, actually over in Asia Pacific. So I had done well.
Yes.
But it wasn't clear to me, due to a bunch of things that went on, but it wasn't clear to me that I was actually going to ultimately become CEO of IBM. And that was still my goal. So I said, you know what? Let me take what I've learned and let me go build something. Silicon Valley was hot. This is the late 90s. I said, all right, but I did my homework, which, oh, by the way, doesn't stop when you're in school. Did my homework because, again, if you're going to put a plan in place and you want to increase your odds, you got to figure out what you're going up against. And a lot of people that have left big companies to go run small companies or growing companies stumble a time or two because it's so different. Well, as a woman of color, I don't have that luxury. I don't know that I'll get multiple strikes at the bat. So as a result, I said, all right, let me go get a seat at the table job or two, understand what's so different, and then go get my CEO job. And in essence, that's what I did, Andrea, and ultimately became CEO of the company that's now MetricStream. Ran it for over 14 years, became a global industry leader in governance, risk, and compliance with over 1,200 employees. And now I serve on corporate boards like Verizon and Nordstrom and Roper and Okta and advise companies like the Royal Bank of Canada and some small startups and coach some CEOs and try to make a difference in the world.
Wow. It sounds like making a difference in the world and making a difference in your own life, though, are closely connected.
They are.
And there are, you know, my next book is called Rethink, Smashing the Myths of Women in Business. And for those of you who are listening, you know, I offer you 10, including 11 myself, other stories. But Shelley's story is exactly the kind of hurdles women have to hurdle over. And the way in which you can, in fact, prepare yourself for the hurdles. And this is not glass ceiling stuff. It's not about smashing that. Yeah. Forget the ceiling. This is about finding ways to really make a difference globally, locally, but in yourself at the same time. Well, it's exciting. You've written a couple of books, but this new one is extremely important to you, both as a way of sharing what you've learned with others, but also how it came together. Would you share it with our listeners, please?
Absolutely, Andy. So I've always tried to be accessible. And what that means is I actually respond. You send me an email, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. I respond. Now, it takes a lot of time. But the reason I do it is I want people to see that I'm a real person. If you can touch me, then you can be me. And that's why I've always put the time to do it. But what was happening as I was moving forward in my career is I could respond, but I couldn't meet with all the people that wanted to meet or talk one-on-one with all the people that wanted to talk to me. So I said, you know, one day I'm going to write this down. I'm going to share the what made Shelley Shelley, the strategies, the lessons, all those things as soon as I get into phase two. So sure enough, when I passed the CEO baton, I said, now's the time. And I wrote the book because the book is full of strategies and approaches and tools to help people achieve their aspirations, both professionally and personally. I talk about being intentional. I talk about, honestly, everything, personal and professional. There's a lot of stuff in there. What worked, what didn't work. Because what I've learned is ambition and hard work alone are not enough. Mm-hmm. And we're not told that. What we're told is work hard and it'll happen. And no, I hate to burst the bubble. It's not how it works.
Oh, well, tell us, how does it work? And I'll tell you why in a moment, because it may not even work with what works. But, you know, let's finish that. Hard work and ambition isn't enough. What else do we need?
That's right. So we need to understand the power of being intentional. So I talk about really how to be intentional, how to set the goal, the objectives, whatever it is. And then first you set it. Then, and some people do. Some people set goals. And some people put plans in place to achieve the goals. But very few people make decisions every day.
Yes.
Consistent with those plans.
And so every day comes along, but the goal is never achieved.
Exactly. And they wake up and, you know, they're in their late 30s, they're in their 40s. They're like, oh, gosh, I'm just not where I thought I would be. Right. And so the book is trying to help them get back on track, or if they're just starting out in their career, right, help them get on track and stay on track versus, you know, not, because so much of the everyday decisions drives what happens. So being intentional, deciding what do I want? How do I make it true? Because that's how I've looked at things. You know, when I set out to be CEO of IBM, I said, all right, I want to be CEO of IBM. So what has to be true? And then you do the work to say, well, what did CEOs do? So when I started out my career with IBM, coming out of Wharton, I started out in sales. Mm-hmm. Now, think about this, Andrew. My peers are going off to be investment bankers and Procter & Gamble project managers and going to international finance, and right, because it's Wharton and you come out and that's what you do. And they're looking at me like, what? You're going to go be a salesperson? I mean, what? Exactly.
But there's a reason for that. Tell us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The reason is every single CEO at IBM started out in sales, right? So that was the path. You know, I believe you go and you look for where the path is. Where's the current?
Yes.
Because if you can get on the current and then paddle hard while you're on the current, you can really move forward. If you're not on the current, you can paddle hard, but you're not keeping up with the people who are paddling hard on the current.
Nope.
So look to see where the current is.
And organizations have their own unique culture and currents.
They absolutely do.
So one size fits nowhere. You really need to know what you want to be where and how to paddle along there. But the
absolutely.
Thing that's so important for the listener is that Shelley's onto something that we use and talk about a great deal when changing an organization, but an individual as well. In fact, I'm doing a leadership academy and we're talking about this. You need to visualize where you want to be. Because when you visualize it, your brain begins to create a story. Literally, it's creating a new movie set. Right now, once you got that visualization, and I don't say this lightly, you need to almost backward plan it. So that way you know that each day you're moving towards that story as if you're writing part of a storyboard. Don't make it sound simple or easy. You got to live your way to that destination. And I don't even like to call it a goal. It's a visualization of who you are and how you're going to be in life. And then you can begin to live there. Does that make sense in terms of what you're saying?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I talk about. I mean, Andrew, for instance, I had decided that ideally, I painted my ideal picture of what I wanted. And my ideal picture was, yes, I worked towards becoming a CEO, but I also wanted to get married. I wanted to have kids. And I wanted to have kids early. My parents were young parents, and I liked that. I said, you know what? I'd like to be young when I have my kids. So, well, what that meant for me is I didn't date anybody beyond the point where I could imagine myself being married to them. I wouldn't even go out with people that I couldn't imagine myself being married to.
No shopping around here.
Yeah, no. So it's crazy. I mean, when I say it was crazy, many people were like, you know, I would go out once or twice and I wouldn't again. Well, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing's wrong. Well, I thought you had fun. I had a great time. There was no way I could tell them, but I can't marry you, because they would have said, what? I didn't ask you to marry me. But I felt if I dated people that I couldn't imagine myself married to, then when I might miss people who came along that I could imagine myself being married to. So it was this, anyway, again, other people didn't do that. It was me. It was crazy. So, but
yes,
I did get married early and I did have my kids early. And I was married for almost 35 years before my husband passed. So it worked. Mm-hmm. So yes, I completely believe that. And that's the whole point about being intentional.
Yep.
Figure out the goal. What needs to be true for that goal to happen? And then put plans in place to make it true.
Yes.
And then live consistent with that so that you open yourself up. You know, people talk about luck. And I totally believe in luck. But I do believe that you can make yourself more lucky by having the right skills, the right experience, the right openness when opportunity comes along.
Yep.
So yes, fully agree.
Now a word from our sponsors, Simon Associates Management Consultants. Simon Associates is us. And we love to help you see, feel, and think in new ways to help you and your business grow. We specialize in applying the tools and methods of anthropology, but we're also entrepreneurs and business builders. And we like to share our experience and expertise with you. So if you're stalled or stuck or starting up, give us a buzz and let's see if we can help you as well. You can learn all about us at simonassociates.net and read my book, learn about it at andysimon.com. There's a free chapter you can download and a toolkit you'll find very helpful. We're on Amazon and you can buy it as a book, an ebook, or even an Audible that I recorded myself. We look forward to hearing from you at simonassociates.net. info@simonassociates.net is right to us. Now back to our podcast.
Now there's something here to also emphasize, and that's we decide with the heart and the eyes, and then the brain comes in with the logic or reasoning about it, and then we act. So I tell people in my podcast and everything else, you need to see it and feel it, and don't underestimate the power of the gut. There are lots of nerves from the brain to the gut. How does it feel? And that's just what you're expressing here, because luck is a matter of seeing things fly by and feeling how they can come together to do something that's in the story that you're carrying. And I don't want to underestimate, you began to feel things that could work and disregard things that didn't. Those guys weren't going to work. But your husband did work really well and you felt it. And I don't want to underestimate, I want to emphasize, trust your feelings. They do work, don't they?
They do. They do. But it's hard. You know, so much of the world is telling us
yes.
A lot of times something different. And, you know, even for me, when I first got engaged to my husband, I don't want to say no one was in my court. Grudgingly, people were, but very few. I had lots of detractors on this, and it would have been so easy just to have just caved, right? But I knew he was right for me. And
I'm curious about something. There's this whole world of others helping women in particular, but men as well. Were there mentors in your career path that were important for us to know about as a way of building helpers? My husband and I started something called the Simon Initiative for Entrepreneurship at Washington University in St. Louis to help particularly women, but men and women become entrepreneurs, and they need role models and they need so much help. Mm-hmm. We wanted to do more than mentor one or two, but to begin to show them a way. I have a hunch mentors have been important in your career as well. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mentors were very important to me. That's all part of, you know, listening and learning, et cetera. And probably the biggest thing I learned was that it isn't one mentor. Ah. It's many mentors. As far as I was concerned, the more the better, because they all bring unique and different perspectives. And yes, there were absolutely mentors that played huge roles in my career.
How'd you find them?
Interesting you should ask. So what I also learned early on is that if you ask people to be your mentor, a lot of times, visually, literally, if you'd sit there and say, Shelly, would you be my mentor? And people would like lean back. I mean, literally, create distance and space, right? Eyes would get big and wide,
oh,
right?
I've had that feeling too, Shelly.
All right, exactly. And so what happens? Well, why are they doing that? It's not you. It's they're sitting there and all they're thinking is time commitment. Because people that you want to be your mentor, they don't have time.
No.
So they therefore tend to say no. They'll do it in polite ways sometimes. Sometimes it'll just be direct, but they say no. So I learned not to ask.
You just began to...
I just began treating them as mentors. I call it, I just adopted them. And so, and ultimately what I found is if I adopted people and then I did well and I... you know, was building that relationship that ultimately they would claim me. Oh, Shelly. Oh yeah. I give her advice from time to time, right? So I tell people, don't ask. Yes. Just start treating them that way.
But there's also the sense of your value. And I do say self-value is important here because what you're describing is a person yourself who had a mirror that said, I'm of value. I just need to find my path to demonstrate it and a way of engaging others to help me along that path without imposing upon them respectfully.
Right. Yeah, can I interject for just a second?
Oh, yeah, go for it, baby.
All right. Because, you know, it sounds like the way you're describing it sounds like, okay, here's Shelly, nice and confident. She's got her plan. She's executing her plan the whole bit. And what I have to tell you is I had a plan. I was driven because I wanted to be... I just wanted to be warm. Growing up, our house, and we lived in the Northeast, the temperature in our house never got above 68. Now, it never got above 68. It was definitely below 68 often. It never got above 68 degrees. And I used to say, gosh, and whenever I talked about how cold it was in the house, you know, my parents, my mom would always say, well, do you want to go to college? Your whole thing was trade-offs, right? Trade-offs. Because we didn't have a lot of excess money for anything. And I finally said, how much money do I need to earn to keep the temperature at 72 degrees, right? So I was very motivated to have a career, to be successful, to be able to have a warm home, you know, the whole bit. That's what motivated me. But frankly, I wasn't that confident person that I sound like now.
Well, that's humbling to know.
I had a lot of, you know, I had a lot of imposter syndrome. You know, I had a lot of, because again, remember how I grew up and the challenges. So I knew the world was like not in my corner here. But you can overcome those things. And I talk about that in the book, right? You know, because we aren't raised like, oh, I got this. Right? I can say that now that I'm 58 years old, but I couldn't say it then. So there are things that you can do. You know, one of my biggest pieces of advice on how to help yourself fake it till you make it, because that's honestly what I believe. It's like, okay, you put on this role, is to have cheerleaders in your lives.
Yep.
Have people around you that tell you how good you are, how competent you are, that remind you when the world is telling you otherwise, that you are still the person you were before.
Yes.
That you know, I think it's so important because we live in a world that is so judgmental. I mean, you know, and we're not, nobody, not me, nobody is perfect.
No.
We're not, nobody is skinny enough, healthy enough, you know, working enough, making enough money, going on the best vacations, wearing all the right clothes, doing, I mean, having all the right friends, being at the right parties, being, I mean, you just go on, right? I mean, all these things that we see, that we feel judged about, right? Of course, everybody feels totally inept. So you have to have people around you that say, hey, no, you're great. And we'll also, when you need it, give you a kick in the butt.
Yep. I'm curious. My husband has been my kick in the butt, hug you tight, always the anchor and the push along. I don't think I would have finished my PhD if he refused to allow me to be an ABD, all but degree. And there were many nights he and I were reading that dissertation, closing our eyes, but never giving up. And he doesn't now either. And those are moments that are important to who we are because somebody else mattered that we achieved what we were pursuing not for their sake, but for together our sake. I have a hunch your husband did the same.
He did. He was definitely my biggest cheerleader.
And after that, I didn't need much more than that, because there was always the belief that who I thought I could be, he did as well. And so we overcame a bunch of hurdles along the way. I was an executive on a bank, and I'd go to board meetings with 49 men and me. You didn't say much. And I learned not to say much. I was there to do, but not to say. It was interesting times. We're just about ready to wrap. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking with Shelley. I think her life journey and her wisdom has been so important to our listeners, men and women, both, because I think both are changing. And I do think that as I did my book, the women in there had partners or men in their lives, some had none, who were changing as the women were changing. It's not a solo event. It's a real interesting cultural transformation going on here. Shelley, a couple of things you don't want our listeners to forget. The ending is always so important. One or two or three things that are real important for their lives.
Certainly. So first, be intentional. Decide what you want. And then put a plan in place to go get it. Two, have cheerleaders. We talked about it. It's really important. And three, I firmly believe if you don't tell the universe what you want, the universe can't help you.
Yes.
So ask for what you want and what you need and give people a chance to help.
That is very important. Be just open about it. You know, it's if you need a hand, ask. Worst thing they can say is nope. And then you make them help you anyhow. Those mentors didn't even know they were being so helpful. And in the end, they were ready to take it and claim it. It's been a pleasure. If they want to get your book, it's not coming out till October, but they can pre-order it as I have done.
Yes, indeed. So pre-order on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can go to your local bookstore or call them up and support them by pre-ordering it there. And let me just make a plea. As a new author, pre-orders are so important. So if you felt you got a little value from our conversation, please give it a pre-order. There's a whole lot more in the book.
And then I'll push. Once you've read the book, go review it. Amazon loves reviews, and people don't realize that that paragraph makes a big difference in your Amazon rankings, and everything is rankings today. So there's something there. But I also think that Shelley would, she said she answered all those emails. I'm not sure she needs more emails, but I do think she needs your echoes, because, you know, I do think that sharing is good if it's a two-way. The gift of giving also comes back to add more value over time. And it's a time for her now to think of her next purpose. What comes next? And it's a very exciting time for her. So it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much. I absolutely enjoyed it.
Now, for all of you who come, I can't thank you enough. Your emails are extremely important for me as well. info@andysimon.com or info at simonassociates.net. And it's always fun to hear from you. You bring me wonderful ideas. That's how Shelley came to me. And I think that this is a time for us to be intentional about where we're going and see the opportunities. I can only tell you that you decide with your heart. So if it feels right, go for it. Worst case is you'll make a left or a right turn. Think of your life as a Google map. Maybe you don't have the destination clear, but you need some stops along the way. So small wins work, get going. And that's what we love to do. So have a great day. Please stay safe, stay healthy, and enjoy life. Bye-bye now.